You may proceed.
May it please the Court, my name is Nina Ringgold. I am going to be reserving 2 minutes for rebuttal.
All right.
I want to focus my arguments on two key issues. First, I want to highlight three fundamental errors I think but perceive throughout the pre-trial and trial proceedings. And then I'd like to urge this Court to set forth the law in the circuit that pro se litigants are entitled to attorney's fees and costs under Rule 11. And that's a matter that hasn't been addressed by the circuit. First of all, the three fundamental errors I think are really important. They sort of focus the arguments in the brief is that of the November 17th, 1996 short sale contract, the cause of action for violation of the automatic bankruptcy stay, and the treatment of the World Savings Bank appraisal. First, as to the short sale contract, at the very commencement of the proceedings, each respondent was required by the automatic disclosures to disclose the short sale transaction. Citicorp claimed privilege and didn't produce a privilege log. Garcia, Grubb, and Ferrante, who were the alleged purchasers, provide any verification for their disclosures. And what's really important is they also filed a motion to compel arbitration. I think what was really interesting in that motion was that in the evidentiary record at 28.9559, they actually indicate that I was not a party to the short sale transaction, therefore I couldn't state a claim for breach of contract. Well, as far as I can remember, women could own property. The deed was my community property, and I don't know how a short sale transaction could be taking place when I, as an owner, am not a party to the contract. Then we have Lockhart, who claimed the privilege and did produce documents claimed a privilege. And then we have World Savings Bank, who refused to produce documents whether or not they were privileged. So during the whole time the district court was ruling on the four orders dismissal orders, I was deprived of the opportunity to have the short sale transaction, to actually see it, and the fundamental documents that required for me to respond to those motions to dismiss. Then at the summary judgment level, the short sale contract again comes up again, with Stan Hicks claiming that this contract is attached to his declaration, when it's not, as Exhibit C. Then at the trial proceedings, the short sale contract comes up again. And in error, the district court ruled that I was not allowed to require Citicorp to produce the short sale contract under a trial subpoena, and it ruled that the actual short sale transaction was irrelevant. And I think the case that I cited in my brief, which was Lamb versus Harborough, squarely holds that the motive and intent for trespass is relevant, and the short sale transaction was demonstrating what was the motive and intent for the trespass. The violation of the automatic bankruptcy stay was a key issue throughout the proceedings. At the point of the initial pretrial proceedings, the court ruled that without a motion under 12B3 or 28.157, no motion being filed by the defendants to dismiss, to transfer the case to the bankruptcy court, the court sua sponte raised on its own motion that the violation of the automatic bankruptcy stay cause of action would be dismissed. I had no opportunity to respond to that cause of action, and that cause of action is integrally related.
Could you just articulate to me again what, in your view, was the violation?
Well, these real estate transactions are taking place with respect to my property. Were taking place after I had filed bankruptcy. And at the point of filing bankruptcy in February of 1997, any transaction relating to my property would have been subject to the automatic bankruptcy stay. Instead, Citicorp proceeded with a short sale transaction, misrepresented in a divorce proceeding as well as in the district, as well as in the bankruptcy court, misrepresented the value of the property and proceeded on with this transaction as if there wasn't a bankruptcy stay in effect. And the fundamental error of that at the trial level was that I asked in my motion in limine number 6 for the jury to have an instruction as to what was required under the bankruptcy stay. In other words, in March of 1997, World Savings Bank, James Garcia, had no business in my home because there was a bankruptcy stay in effect. If they thought they had approval of the bankruptcy court to be proceeding with a transaction, it required the bankruptcy court approval.
Who gave them the key to the home?
Well, the person who allegedly gave the key to the home was Stan Hicks, who was purporting to be a real estate agent acting on my behalf. However, the documents will show from Mason Hicks and McDuffie that Mason McDuffie and Stan Hicks never had a fully executed listing agreement, which is required under California law, that both owners execute a listing agreement. And they failed to have this alleged short sale transaction document in there.
Well, I understand that, but I'm talking about the invasion of privacy claim going into your home. Who gave Mr. Hicks the key?
Well, at the point when I thought that they were going to be a listing agent, they were the real estate broker was provided with the key. However, so that was based on the assumption that there was a fully executed listing agreement.
You had given the key.
And I gave instructions, written instructions to the real estate broker not to allow anyone to enter the property unless I was physically present. So not only is there written instructions from me, to now that it's clear through their own admissions and discovery, there was never a fully executed listing agreement, which is required for a real estate agent to actually engage in selling a property.
I have a question, sure. If you wouldn't mind entertaining one. It deals with Garcia as a witness. On page 56 of your brief, you say that it was over 1 year sentence. The 50 on the red brief says it wasn't. Where in the record do I find whether or not Garcia's conviction was over a year?
I think in a motion in limine number F, which was was the motion in limine that was filed by James Garcia. Pre-trial, he had requested that the district court preclude any reference to his criminal conviction.
And then, okay, I can find that, I guess. Then you indicate that under Rule 403, the district judge did no balancing. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And how do you come to that? Because he said, I'm not going to balance, or what?
Well, at the pretrial conference, which is in the record at 313, specifically, every motion that was filed with respect to, James Garcia's criminal conviction was addressed by the court. And in fact, my jury instruction requested that the court provide a limiting instruction. The court denied my request for a limiting instruction to the jury with respect to how the criminal conviction would be treated in his at the trial proceeding, and other than saying that simply that he was going to blankly deny any reference to it,
you didn't ask for a finding on balancing.
I asked for a jury instruction to.
I understand what you told me. That is correct. You did not ask for a finding.
I did. It was addressed at the pretrial conference as to what factors would be considered, and other than saying that blanketly that.
So you see, what you told us is that he didn't balance. How do I know he didn't balance unless you asked for a finding?
Well, I think
balancing is something district court judges do all the time. It's just in their head. How can we conclude he didn't?
Well, I think that with respect to the motion in limine that was filed, as well as the opposition to the motion in limine, as well as the arguments that were presented at the pretrial conference.
Yeah.
I also think that at the point where there was an inquiry at the trial proceeding asking for the to inquire into matters relating to the conviction, and the court denied the request, I think that those are the only opportunities where counsel can address that matter. And if the district court is not going to allow you to present that matter, that's
One final question. On page 81 of your brief, you want sanctions because you're pro se. I had understood you were an attorney admitted to practice.
That's correct. I'm an attorney, but I am also acting on my own behalf in this matter. And I think that with respect to the Rule 11 sanctions, I think that the court did not consider it to be, first, objectively reasonable that it's not objectively reasonable that World Savings Bank would say that ostensible agency is a defense to trespass.
Have you got a case that says that we give pro se sanctions when a person is admitted to practice in law?
Yes, Your Honor. The cases that I cited in my brief is Chemekin versus Yemov, which is the Eastern District of Pennsylvania, as well as the Second Circuit in Renensky versus James Hospital at 932 Fed Second 124.
That's Second Circuit?
It's the Second Circuit.
Thank you.
The 11th Circuit has recently addressed the issue and has made a distinction between the fact of if someone is an attorney and acting in pro se, whether or not the attorney is claiming that they've lost income from by being away from their practice.
Providing attorneys.
Attorney's fees,
okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Versus being being measured by lost income.
Right.
And I think that in my situation, my declaration specifically states I'm requesting to be compensated for the financial loss as well as expenses.
I think we've got your point in mind, and you're beyond your time, but I'm going to give you a minute rebuttal.
Thank you very much.
I will also add time for them. How are the appellees going to divide their time?
Siriato.
Good morning. May it please the Court. Walt Traver on behalf of Defendant World Savings Bank. Your Honors, in light of the number of issues and the number of parties, we had all conferred and felt it best to defer to the Court in terms of whether there are any specific questions or issues that the Court would like to have addressed and go from there. It simply seemed too voluminous for each of us to make a presentation.
Right.
I have a question of Citi. Is that you?
No.
Never is. All right.
Gold on behalf of Citi Mortgage.
I would like to know what evidence there is that Citi hired people to collect the debt. It's an issue that kind of came through the briefs as I read them, but I couldn't put my finger on it.
I'm not aware of that. I mean, I'm here on behalf of Citi Mortgage, but that's not a claim that was made against.
And I know you're well prepared for this argument, so you've gone through the briefs and the record. Is there any evidence that you know of Citi hiring people to collect the debt?
Not to my knowledge, Your Honor.
There's nothing in the record that you know.
Not to my knowledge, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you. That's the only one I had. I read all the briefs.
Well, I suppose the only thing for rebuttal then would be if you had any citation or reference with respect to Judge Wallace's question.
The question with respect to the
collection of the.
Oh, with respect
to anyone that was asked to collect the debt. Is there any evidence of that?
Yes, Your Honor. I think that as a matter of law, a short sale transaction can be treated as a form of debt collection. In this circumstance, the real estate brokers, just like attorneys, are not exempt from the Fair Debt Collection and Practices Act. Here, Citicorp, without a listing agreement, without me being involved in a short sale, entered into a short sale transaction with James Garcia and Anthony Ferrante. A short sale usually arises after there's been a default or institution of foreclosure proceedings. A short sale transaction is when the amount of the mortgage is less, the value of the property is less than the amount of the mortgage. The payoff of the loan requires that certain lien holders will be paid off as well as any debt against the property. So, in fact, if the owner of the property has not engaged in a contract to actually sell their property, in essence, a short sale transaction results in a payoff of the lender, which is a form.
So you're just saying it's tantamount to a debt collection by its virtue of its form.
Correct. And okay. Similar to the case of I think it's Romaine versus Western Union, where the court, where the ninth, I believe, of this circuit held that the actual physical, the act of certain ways of handling the telegram situation in Western Union resulted in a form of debt collection.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate your argument. The case just argued of Ringgold versus Garcia is submitted. We're adjourned for the morning.